Hey guys, welcome back to the How To Podcast. The How To Podcast is a lifestyle podcast on creating life you want. This week we have Bill Keen. Bill is a chartered retirement planning counselor, and he's also the founder and CEO of Keen Wealth Advisors. He's also a best-selling author and co-host of the Keen on Retirement podcast. I talked with Bill this week about what people in their 20s need to know about saving for retirement. And he did such a good job sitting down and talking with me. It's kind of difficult, you know? I mean, a lot of the people he works with are in their 50s, 60s, 70s, you know? So they're entering that retirement age or they're in retirement. And so being able to sit down and really kind of let us younger professionals know what we can do to save for retirement and to save for the future was super helpful. We talk about why you should start saving early, making a financial plan, rules of engagement, and just good tips and tricks for working with a financial planner. So, super excited, and let's get started. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Lily. It's great to be on your program.
Yes, I'm so excited to have you, but you are the podcasting pro between the two of us.
Oh, wow. Please. you're making me blush over here.
Yes. Well, we can, you know, do all the plugs later, but you've had a podcast for 6 years on anything and everything, retirement and savings. So I just hope that you don't show me up today.
All right. Well, I promise I won't. I've listened to many of your podcast episodes and I'm super impressed. So I think we'll have a wonderful conversation today. I'm looking forward to it big time.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, we kind of already did a little bit of an intro, but do you kind of want to expand a little more on what you do, your experience in the industry?
Yeah, for sure. So interesting. I got out of college, and this might resonate with some of your listeners. I was a guy that knew early on that I was going to have to get out of college and I was going to have to be successful. I was going to be probably supporting my parents. And that was a tough thing to think about when I'm younger. Like I say this in my book that I have out, we can talk about later. I was 10 or 11 years old thinking I was going to have, knowing that I was going to have to support my parents someday. Puts a lot of pressure on somebody. But I would say that I would call that a blessing because I knew that I had to make it. Their success was a must. Failure was not an option. We've heard people say that in the past, and this was true. So I knew that I wanted to pursue finance in college. I wanted to understand money. I wanted to understand how to take care of my business, how to take care of my affairs, so that I could indeed provide for myself and my family. I didn't even know what that was, but I was told by someone that's called a finance degree. So I pursued a finance degree with real intention, got right out of college and was hired into what's called a brokerage firm. I would relate it today to companies like Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley. I was actually hired by a company called Dean Witter. Most of your listeners probably won't remember that company, but
I've heard of it.
Okay. But it was folded into what's Morgan Stanley today. Mm-hmm. And I was transported from Kansas City, Missouri, out into the 83rd floor of the World Trade Center in New York.
Wow.
And this was the year that just a few months after, 1 month after, a Ryder truck was driven into the World Trade Center parking garage and detonated. You might have remember hearing about that or studying about that. It was a terrorist attack on the trade centers in early 90s. And so I was in New York at that time, a kid from Kansas City, basically working on how to build a brokerage practice from the ground up. No money, no contacts, no influence, nothing. And that's kind of where I got started. I say that my life was kind of like a cross between the first half of the original Wall Street movie, mm-hmm. before Bud Fox Goes Bad.
Yeah.
Now, please don't get that confused with Wolf of Wall Street. It's important that you don't get that confused.
Yes.
I'm talking about the original Wall Street movie with Charlie Sheen and a movie called The Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith. One. Yeah. So it was kind of like a melding of those two movies. In fact, the movie Pursuit of Happiness, that the main character in that movie that Will Smith plays started at Dean Witter for real, in real life.
That's maybe where I've heard of it. I'm like, yes. Yeah, I've heard of that. Yes, that's where I've heard it from.
Yes. So I've now been in business for 29 years, and I was able to make it in the industry, which was really hard to do. My pep talk from the manager at the time was, you know, about 90% of the people fail in this industry, kid. You probably will, but we're required to hire so many people a year, so good luck. To where now I have a firm over the course of the last three decades, nearly, operating in Overland Park, Kansas, that we deal with clients in 37 different states. And we have a very, you know, very, I'm very grateful to say we have a very successful firm here with many employees and a solid footing. So it's been a wonderful journey.
Yeah, definitely. I knew whenever I wanted to touch on this topic about saving for the future, and especially a lot of people listening are in their 20s. I knew you were the person to do it, had to go to the big dog. And so, you know, you have lots of experience, like you said. For a lot of people listening, you know, we are young and it's really hard to kind of visualize life's what seems so far away, retirement. And so can you kind of give any good insight on really why it's important to one, save and start saving early, you know, when we have our whole careers to save? I've talked to a lot of friends and I'm like, you know, are you saving for retirement? And it's like, well, ish, but you know, we're only 25. We have so much time. What would you say?
Right. Right. I mean, it's easy to say for sure, because so many things can crowd out the priorities. And you know, in our firm that we operate today, and that I've operated over these three decades, we really help people think through their vision for what an ideal life will look like out in the future. This is not about speculating in Bitcoin or speculating in the hottest pot stock or something, Tesla, at these levels. It's not about gambling or speculation. So first of all, we really have to be able to draw a line in the sand between what true investing for the future is and what speculation, or I would just say rank gambling, is. There's a lot of those things that we mentioned, GameStop, others. I was on Fox News recently, the local affiliate talking about GameStop and that whole thing. We can touch on that later. There's a huge difference between investing for the future and just speculating with your resources. But I think that there's so many things that go into being a prudent steward of the resources that you earn. Things like taxes. You got to make sure we pay the least amount of taxes we can legally. We have to think about how we take any excess money that we have and invest it in ways that actually serves us. Right now, if you have money in a bank, Lily, if you're getting more than 0% right now, I would say you've got a good deal, because mm-hmm. banks are paying virtually nothing right now on deposits that you have, which might be a reason a lot of people would say, especially folks in their 20s might say, why would I put money in the bank? It doesn't pay me anything.
Right.
But you got to take it back one more step and say, what's important to me when it comes to spending? What do I really need to spend money on? And do I want to be tied to a job? I mean, can you imagine, can you visualize out into the future? And you could say, well, when I'm 50, when I'm 60, when I'm 65, there's no rule that doesn't say that. Why wouldn't you just say 40? I mean, you pick a date and work toward something in the future where work becomes optional. And this is a powerful thing. That's called being independently wealthy. Sounds crazy to a lot of folks, especially when you're just getting started. But the idea that you would not be tethered to working for somebody else, that you would be able to make a decision to stop work and live on the assets that you have saved in your life. And it's so hard, because the pain is now. If you're saving money, it's immediate pain. If you save money today, you're not spending, so you're foregoing enjoying that money today. So I would call that painful in some way, and you're experiencing pain for this long-term pleasure 20, 30 years out into the future. It's a hard trade to make at times, but if you can get your mind around being freed from having to report in, having to clock in, having to be accountable to an employer or held accountable to it, to having to make money, all of a sudden you can kind of make that bet in your head or make that trade-off and say, I'll experience a little short-term pain. And we can even make it where it's not so painful, actually, mm-hmm. by saving money now and being smart and prudent with your investments so that you actually can have maximum freedom later in life. And when I talk about freedom, I'm talking about freedom of time, mm-hmm. freedom of money, freedom of relationships, and freedom of purpose. I attend a really powerful coaching program called Strategic Coach, and the founder of Strategic Coach talks all the time about freedom of time, money, relationship, and purpose. Okay, so that this is what I'm trying to do is plant leverage. We have to have leverage. I'm trying to plant, it's a mindset. Plant the leverage in your listeners' minds on why it's important to start early. And we can get into compound interest and like the data around starting early if you want to, Lily. I mean, it's very powerful. So I can talk all about mindset and big picture, but if you start looking at the data, you can't deny the facts and the data.
Yeah. Definitely. What's a really simple explanation of compound interest and, you know, why, again, with the data showing that starting early is really going to pay off in the end?
So, you know, we talk about compound interest and somebody really smart and famous at one point said it's the eighth wonder of the world or something along those lines, compound interest. The bottom line is if you put your money in to invest, so let's say you put $100 in and it's making some amount of money. Let's say it made 5% in a given year. So at the end of the year, you've got 105. Now, the compound interest is the interest that $5 that you made in interest in the first year, it will now start making interest. So now you've got interest on the interest.
Yeah.
Now, if you're doing a good job, you will be for yourself. And this is all about doing things to take care of yourself. Now, ultimately, we start thinking about how we can bless others or be gracious with others by giving and helping out in the community and maybe helping family members and so forth. But I'm really talking now about these decisions are about bettering yourself so that you have the choices to do those things later in life. Not doing this for anybody else, for me or anyone else. Saving money for your future is all about bettering yourself and giving you choices in the future. But when your interest starts making interest and you're putting in not just $100 a year, but maybe a month or more, the numbers start to really add up. And it's almost mind-blowing how much you actually can have saved if you start early.
Right. Versus the person who
because
started
of that interest on interest factor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have an example for you. You want to hear my example?
Let's hear it.
Don't you? Okay. Now let's say we have one person and your listeners might say, oh, come on, Bill, you can't say this is a lot of money to ask to save. So my example is saving $1,000 per month starting at age 25.
Okay.
All right. Just come with me on this. Okay. Because you might initially say, hey, that's crazy. That's a lot of money. But just come with me on this example and I'll explain to you why it's not as much as you think. You save this first person saved $1,000 a month at 25 and stopped doing it at age 35.
So 10 years.
Yes. That's it. The next person waited until 35, did the same thing, and they stopped at 45. Again, 10 years. Same amounts of money being invested. The third person waited until 45, invested for 10 years, $1,000 a month, and stopped at 55. So basically what we've got, same amount of money being saved monthly by the same three people. One started at 25, one started at 35, and one started at 45. You might say, well, probably not a lot different. So assuming a 7% interest rate, and we can talk later about how to invest money, what asset classes that will behoove, especially a young person, but 7% is a conservative rate. It doesn't mean it won't be volatile, but it's a conservative number to use in my example. if you're invested in a broad base of stocks out in the US market and global markets. The person that started at 45, the late starter, accumulated $373,000 just over.
When they retired?
At age 65.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good point. That's the end point, age 65. $373,000, a little bit over. And you might say, well, that's pretty good. They only invested $120,000. I say only. It's a lot to invest. Mm-hmm. But they've put in $120,000. It's worth $373,000 plus. The person that started at 35, their amount now is $734,000 at age 65. Okay, so same amount of money invested. They just did it earlier. And that whole compound interest and time value of money thing just had more time to rock. Mm-hmm. The person who started at 25, the early starter, had $1.44 million.
Wow.
At age 65. Okay, this is just data. You can put this in a financial calculator. It'll give you the information. The power of starting early and doing anything and everything you can to get your accounts seeded. I say you've got to plant the seed so it can start to grow. It almost becomes addictive too. When you start thinking about freedom later in life, and you know what, we can have freedoms today too, as we're working. I'm still working. I've been in business 30 years. I'm still working, but I tell you, I've been able to create a life that I get to do the things I love to do. And I have a team around me that I can delegate things that they're best at, that I'm not the best at. So I've got a wonderful life and I don't really even have to work anymore. I could probably have retired years ago, but I love what I'm doing. And I have those freedoms that I talked about, those four freedoms. Mm-hmm. And we're all kind of working toward those four freedoms our entire lives, but we got to get conscious of them and think through this stuff and be intentional before stuff will come to fruition very intentionally instead of just randomly. So you might be thinking, is that a powerful demonstration of starting early?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, again, I've talked to so many people that I'm like, why aren't you saving now? And it's like, well, you know, I have so much time and I have loans to pay off right now. And I have all these things that I should probably get in order before I really start digging in and saving for retirement. So I think that's a really powerful example of you can wait and we can both put in the same amount of money. But I mean, the science shows that the earlier you save, the, like you said, it has longer to sit and to really plant the seed and grow.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And again, you've got to get in touch with your future self and see it out into the future. I believe to get the leverage today to make the right decision to, because you're going to defer spending money on other things and to put it in this longer term investment account. Now, before I explain to you how on earth can I save that much mm-hmm. in my early 20s or mid 20s, I want to tell you a little bit about how we want to in buckets of money that we need to have. Okay, it's just a kind of a quick primer. For everybody that we advise, and by the way, we advise people in their 20s. A lot of people think you have to have $1 million to see somebody like us, or you have to have some huge amount of money to get it started. We will help people at almost any stage, okay? The one thing that we have is we just request people be serious about their wealth building, like be serious about the wealth building. And if we talk to somebody, we do an intro call, we realize that there's not a fit or there'd be a better place or a cheaper place or something like that. We will refer people to different websites or different sources. So keep that in mind. But one thing I like to say is everyone should have about 6 months of their living expenses in some kind of a bank account. So if it costs you $2,500 a month to live, or I mean, who knows, whatever, you know, maybe you have a roommate and it doesn't cost that much. Some people cost more.
Yeah.
Just let's say it costs $2,000 a month to cover your basic living expenses. I would want to see you having about $10,000 to $12,000 sitting in a bank account somewhere. And it's going to be a savings account. Get it out of your checking account, because if money that's in your checking account is likely to get spent, it just happens. Even at my stage in life, I still have my money split out in different accounts, because if I have a bunch of money sitting in my checking account, I'm still likely to, I might spend that money and not mean to. Do you know what I'm talking about? Can you relate?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, you know, if it's between a massage and saving 6 months, I'm going to pick the massage.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you see it there. It's easy to kind of lose track of it. So you set up a separate account, make it a savings account. back in the day, they used to pay interest. I mean, now you're lucky to get, seriously, you're lucky to get a quarter of a percent or 0.1.
Right. Like I get like a cent here and there.
Yeah. It's not even enough to send you a 1099 on, you know, when you do your taxes every year, it's not even enough interest for they even bother sending you a 1099 anymore, basically, unless the balance is huge. But so have that set up, have an emergency reserve account. It's super important because the last thing you want to do, wealth is a mindset. And the last thing you want to be doing is feeling like you're constantly scrambling. You're constantly behind. There's more month at the end of the money. You're always, there's no margin in your budget. And I can speak to that about time too, over scheduling ourselves, but that's a different podcast. But making sure that we're not, we don't live in a place of scarcity. If you're living in a place of scarcity, you will never attract wealth. You will attract what you are. And if you're living in a place of abundance and margin, you will be able to plant these seeds and make them blossom and flower. So by having an emergency reserve, and you might even say, that sounds like a lot of money, 10 to 12,000 bucks. Well, let's say that you do have that. If something goes wrong, if you're responsible for your air conditioner, it's an example I use, and it goes out, you got money to pay it. If your car breaks down, you've got money to pay for it. You're not scrambling. It's so important to have that set aside. And I, of course, also recommend folks use credit cards. Credit cards create safety around purchases. You can return things. If there's fraud, you can get the fraud reversed. I recommend using credit cards, not debit cards. I don't like debit cards. I know a lot of young people like debit cards, but if a fraudster gets a hold of your debit card,
it's all downhill.
Well, they take your cash and it's real cash that left your bank account. Mm-hmm. Are you following me? If somebody gets your debit card, it's real cash that goes out the door. And then the banks, it takes a while to get the cash back, if ever. Mm-hmm. If you use a credit card and somebody gets a hold of it, who cares? You call the credit card. Well, we do care. I don't mean to be blasé about it. But what I'm saying is
it's easier.
You call the credit card company, report the fraud, and boom, they take it right off. It's just part of it. Yeah. I think you're liable for 50 bucks maximum or something on a credit card. So, but I do recommend you pay off those credit cards at the end of every month. So whatever you can do, pay off the credit cards every month, build your credit, don't give them any of their high interest, and have an emergency reserve account so that if you have an emergency, you're not living in scarcity, trying to make ends meet and scrambling. And then with the money that you have left over, invest that money for your future. And in those buckets, Lily, you'll have money that you're investing for the next, call it 2 to 3, 4 years. Maybe you're going to buy a house, you need a down payment, so forth. And then you'll have another bucket that's your long-term retirement money that you're really telling yourself in your mind, I'm committing this for decades. I'm going to just tell myself I'm committing this for decades and get your mind around it going into that. And you can start to make a difference. So I hope that helps on the buckets of money and where to start. It's definitely a powerful place to start because you can't start investing. This is what people do. They're trying to trade Bitcoin, Dogecoin, however you pronounce it, GameStop, pot stocks, whatever. And they don't have an emergency reserve set up. And maybe they even have a bunch of money on credit cards, or maybe they're even investing with money they took as cash advances from credit cards. This is a recipe for disaster. You follow me?
Mm-hmm. Totally. And so moving into that, because you touch on this in your book and you touch a lot on this on your podcast, you know, you say like, how do you avoid that? You build a financial plan. What are some of your tips and tricks for, you know, young people to build a really attainable plan? Because I think a big thing about retirement, when you think about it, is it's kind of intimidating, right? Like, you know, you don't know anything about it. And someone's telling you like, make sure you save. And it's overwhelming. So, you know, I think building a financial plan is a really great idea, but it's one of those things where it's like, where do I even start?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, you know, the first thing we have to do, I don't know if we've shared with you, Lily, I'm a pilot as well. So and if you read my book, you know, I'm a pilot. I talk a lot about it because when you're flying an airplane and you're up in the clouds, you can't see anything out the windows because you're in the clouds. You might be dodging thunderstorms. There's some turbulence. You got passengers on board as well as yourself. It requires a lot of pre-flight planning, fuel planning, maintenance planning, weather planning, destination planning. And in the air, it requires maneuvering. It requires constantly bringing your airplane back on course. Now, you might say, wait, aren't we on course the whole time? Well, actually, you're almost on course, but in an airplane, you're constantly off course, actually, most of the time. And you're making small adjustments to keep your plane on course, on the flight plan, to arrive at your destination safely. And I many times talk about flight planning and the life and death nature of it and compare it to financial planning. I even close my book out with the tragic story of JFK Jr., which it's been 20 years plus now that he crashed his airplane into the ocean because of several factors that I talk about in the book. But the planning part of it was a huge part of it. He failed to plan. But having a plan is talking about getting honest about where you are today. So we have to understand, or you have to understand, what's my current situation? A lot of folks don't want to know. Okay. A lot of people don't want to know the reality. And I mean, I will raise my hand and tell you that I've been that guy. So I'm not pointing fingers. Here, let me give you an example. There's a restaurant called Cheesecake Factory.
Love that.
And when
place.
Cheesecake Factory, I love it too. But you know, I went through a transformation last year and got myself down to 7% body fat in my early 50s, right?
Wow.
And so I'm pretty conscious now of my workouts and my calories and so forth. So when Cheesecake Factory, it's been a few years now, decided to start putting the calories on the meals, it really bummed me out. It was one of those things, Lily, I would rather not know. Okay.
Definitely.
can you relate? So one of the other things that I, at a point in my life, I would rather not know, and a lot of people are in this camp, is I would rather not know where my money is going every month. Mm-hmm. I don't want to know that it's going this much to Starbucks and this much to you called it a massage, you name it, eating out, huge one that draws people, you know, money out of folks. So the first thing to do when you're putting a plan together, and I don't even ask people to change anything. I'm not asking you to change anything. I'm just asking you to get conscious of reality. Where is your money going? So get a pen and pad or use the notes thing on your iPhone or whatever phone you have. And every time you spend money, document it for about 30 days. You might think, well, that's silly. I'm spending $1.20 here and $3.50 here. You just do it. It's going to be the best information you've ever had. You get reality about where your money is going. Because when you said that question earlier, that I guess that rebuttal, if you will, about saving money, that, well, I've got this going out here and I'm spending money here and there. Until you get conscious of where your money's actually going and you get it nailed down on paper, you don't really know where your money's going, even though you think you do.
Yeah.
And what you will see is a lot of money is slipping through the cracks that you didn't even realize. Okay. Yeah. And so that's a starting point. We figure out where our money's going. What do we actually have coming in? So we're employed, we're making a certain amount of money per month or every pay period, every year. What are our expenses? Like really just a baseline. You could even do it on a spreadsheet. What's coming in, what are our expenses, and what's all the money that's going out, and really nail it down. And then you start to think out into the future. Then I had an exercise in my book called a vision board, where I sit and I write where I will be 3, 5, 10, and 20 years from now. And I put what my ages will be, because when you start thinking about yourself, your future self in different ages, it kind of freaks you out a little bit,
mm-hmm.
But you got to go there. You got to live it. And there's been a lot of science done on this recently when people can see themselves in the future. There's even aging software that'll show you at different ages that helps you get out into this mindset of future, your future self, to help you change your behavior today. We're trying to change behaviors today so that it affects our future in a very positive way. And so getting into that persona of that future self is really important. But then we can start doing the math and realizing, what do we actually have to save on a given month, given every pay period, so forth, to really work toward that future self. And even when you're in your 20s, you start running financial plans of showing yourself retiring at, let's say, 50, right? Mm-hmm. Most people today retire at 65. But if you started your 20s, you could easily be financially independent by age 50. It goes by quick too.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, believe me, just trust me. It goes by quick. And then time becomes your friend instead of time being your enemy, where you look up and go, oh my God, I can't believe 10 years has passed, or it's been whatever since that one thing happened that we all remember. Has it seriously been 10 years ago that that happened? Yes, it has, because time does fly, and it's all good. You're having fun. It's all good. But get the stuff set up right up front so that time now becomes your friend instead of your enemy. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that I remember when I first had like a really strong vision of time was whenever I was in college. I was in an internship. In my internship, they very graciously started an IRA account for me, which meant nothing to me. Nothing. Now it's like, oh, wait, that's sweet. And at the time I was like, literally, I don't know. It's finals week. Here's my information. I have to go. And so I think there's, and I remember I sat down with their guy, and he was like, so how old are you? I'm like 22. He's like, okay, so we'll just set your retirement date at 2060. And I was like, 2060, because it was only 2018. And I remember that's when was one of my times that I was like, whoa, that's really crazy to think that you know, there's already like a date put on it.
Right.
So I totally get that. And I think that, again, like we've been saying this whole time, it's so hard to picture. And I feel like, right, you know, a lot of people, all you really know is like you have a 401k, but you don't really know what it does or means. You have maybe an IRA, but you don't really know what it means. You know, you have traditional and Roth. And I know this really, and these kind of subjects really vary per person, but kind of like, you know, again, you talk in your book and your podcast about rules of engagement and what that means, what it means to invest. So do you just kind of, should we just go through and kind of like really debunk what all these mean and put it in really simple terms?
Absolutely. I mean, it's perfectly timed. And it also gives us a chance to kind of circle back to that question that I wasn't going to forget about on how on earth can I save that much? Remember?
Yeah.
When I talked about the 1,000 a month, right? And it doesn't have to be 1,000 a month. That was my example. But let me kind of explain to you in the context of answering your 401k question, why 1,000 a month might not be as much as you think. So when we save money, there's a couple ways to do it. And we want to do it, if you think about it, I would like to do it in a way that if I'm investing, if it could be tax advantaged, that would be pretty good. Like if I could save money into an account and not have to pay income tax on that money that I save, I would be down with that. There might be a few strings attached, but that's okay. Like how long you leave the money in there and so forth. But do you remember, Lily, when you got your first paycheck? I remember this. My kids certainly remember it because they come to me and say, what is wrong? There's been a mistake in my paycheck. So what do you mean there's a mistake? They say, well, I make, you know, 10 bucks an hour at this job and I worked 40 hours this week, so I should get 400 and I only got 300 on my check. I'm like, welcome to the world of tax, federal tax, state tax, FICA tax, right? I mean, you remember when you got your first check? Do you remember that or not?
I do. And I remember it was more money than I've ever been given in a check, my first real salary job. And I was like, I'm going to start a fund for college. I can do everything with this. And then I realized the breakdown of what, like you said, you think that you're making and then what you're actually making once all the taxes get taken out.
Right. And it's like, oh, okay. All right. I guess this is something we have to just make more money then. So right. We have more after taxes, but it's a very real thing. And if you are saving for your emergency reserve account that I mentioned earlier in the bank, what you'll do is you'll receive money on your paycheck, you'll pay taxes on it, and you'll save that money in the bank. And that's called an after tax account because you've already paid money on, you've already paid tax on that income. But when you start to save for retirement, there's two or three ways you can do it that's very tax advantageous. And the 401k is, that's actually a tax code is what 401k is, an IRS tax code. But what it says is that you can take money out of your paycheck before it's taxed and put it into an account for your retirement. So let's say that you took out $500 in a month and you put it in the 401k, the whole 500 would go in the 401k free from income tax. Had you taken that money on your paycheck, so let's say you didn't do the 500 in the 401k, you just said, no, pay me the money. Mm-hmm. It probably would have only been around 380 or something after all the deductions come out of it. Are you following me? Yeah. It might have maybe it's 400, right? Maybe it's, but more than likely with state income tax, depending on what state you live in, your $500 is probably only somewhere between 350 and 370 probably after taxes. So we've already identified a delta there where 500 could go in your 401k and it would have only been 350 to you on a paycheck.
Yeah.
But you forwent paying taxes. So the whole 500 went into your retirement account for you. That's a big deal. And if you did that on two pay periods, now you put in $1,000 a month, but it only affected your income by, call it, 700 a month. Right. Now that you can get your mind around somewhat. And listen, in those 401ks, the money grows tax deferred, meaning that all the growth that occurs over the years, you don't pay any income tax on that money until you take it out someday. And the rule is over 59 and a half, you can touch that money. There's ways to get to it before 59 and a half without penalties, which it's very reasonable. And I don't want to say easy ways, but it is. You can get the money back before you're 59 and a half if you're ready to retire and you have the resources by following certain tax codes. It's probably more beyond what we're talking about today is the depth of the thing today. But just know it's 59 and a half typically, but it can be sooner. But let's say that your company, your employer, if you work for an employer, has what's called a company match. Mm-hmm. And in my example, you're putting away, let's say you make $60,000 a year. Okay. And you decide to put in 10% in your 401k. You put in 10%. That's 6,000 right there. So that's half of what we were talking about in my example. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say your employer has a match. And some employers match 100% of what you put in. Some match 50%. Some have limitations on, well, we'll match a certain amount up to 6%, up to 8%, up to typically the lowest I've seen, 6% or so. So you could get the significant match on your savings in your 401k from your employer. That is called, guess what it's called? Guess what a 401k match is called?
Ooh.
Free money.
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
I was thinking of like the technical terms. I was like,
I can see your brain because I know you're very smart. And I was tricking you on that question. So it's called free money. I'm serious. It's free money. Do not miss that. So whatever your employer matches, let's say they'll match the 6%. If you put in six, they'll match six. There's no question. You have to do the 6%. You have to get the match. If they're offering a match, you have to get it. Figure it out. Do whatever it takes on the outside income-wise. Reduce your lifestyle. Get small, whatever it takes. But get the 6% because 6 equals 12 in that scenario. And you're not paying taxes on any of it up front. And so the full amount's going to work for you. It's like you have to do that. But don't stop there. So if they only match, because I get the question a lot. Well, they only match 6%. So should I just put in 6%? Of course not. You put in as much as you can. I always say put in at least 10%, okay, in your retirement accounts. If you can put in 10%, that's a great starting point. I would love to see 15%. 15 is the new 10, is the bottom line. Back in the day when I started in the industry 30 years ago, they said save 10% of your income for retirement. Truly, it's like 15% now. And especially if you want to retire super early, it's worth it. But really try to get yourself at 10. And even if you have to wait till raises to raise it 1% a year or something, you get a raise, don't just take the money, take some of it, add 1% to your 401k. Work it up to 15% over time. Because that's great advice. And get that match.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, I was someone who was saving, you know, like around 8%. I'll just use myself as an example. That's easy. I was saving 8% and now I have worked up to that 15.
Awesome.
But that is a very, it's pretty significant as far as like, you notice, you know, you're definitely putting more away. The paychecks while you're getting raises seem to be staying the same or going down. So, you know, it probably isn't best practice to like, you know, you're putting away 8%. Go ahead and ramp it up. You know, like you said, is it best practice to every month bump it up a percentage until it starts getting uncomfortable? Maybe wait for another raise, bump it up. Is that good practice? Or is it like you're losing out? You need to bump it up as much as you can, as quick as you can.
Yep. So here's practical advice. Okay. So some guy or gal with a spreadsheet would say, just raise it up there and start that way. Well, you know what? That's great. But if you're going to go run a marathon, if somebody you want to train for it and somebody tells you to go run a marathon tomorrow, just do it. It's not possible. So what you're going to do is you're going to say, for lack of a better term, screw this. This isn't possible. I'm out.
Right.
And you're probably going to just abandon the whole thing. So I'm practical in that we've got to do things where we still can have a life. We've still got to be able to enjoy life today. Because, hey, tomorrow's promised to no man or woman, mm-hmm. right? Anything can happen. So I'm not saying completely compromise our current lifestyle to only save for the future. I want people to enjoy their lives. But I would say get it to a point where it hurts a little bit.
Yeah.
And get used to that, because there's a real power in having money come out automatically. When it comes out automatically from your paycheck and just goes to the various accounts, goes to the 401k, and maybe you have a little bit even go into a savings account, like automatically every month, all of a sudden you've truly put it on autopilot. And that's a powerful, powerful tool for anyone at any level of their wealth building. And you just get used to that rhythm and you operate from there. So slower is better. Working toward 10 as quickly as you can and building a lifestyle that you can do 10% is very smart. And then increasing it over time, but not to a point where you just throw your hands in the air and say, this is stupid. Yeah. I'm not doing it anymore. And you run the risk of abandoning the whole thing. Do you see what I'm saying? Almost like if you're trying to work out or diet or whatever it is, anything that's radical like that, you run the chance of abandoning, which we don't want that. I don't want that for people.
Yeah, definitely. You have to be sustainable.
Yep, that's right. But if you have a mind for wealth building, like you really get this, you really get the concept and realize that you are responsible for yourself, for your future. You are responsible. Nobody else is going to say, hey, I mean, just operate with the idea that nobody else is going to say, hey, I've been saving all this money for you. Here it is at some point in the future. And just know that you're responsible for your future and own it. And then visualize the actual joy around being the freedom that it brings, and it can make this actually enjoyable and not, you know, like some huge task that we have to do that's brutal. I would also tell you quickly about if you're saving money in your 401k, there are maximums that you can put in. The maximum you can put in is $19,500. Okay. So mm-hmm. if you start putting in big percentages and you're making some good money, I mean, next thing you know, you hit the max. It's $19,500 a year. That's it. Plus right. what the employer will match. So the employer mm-hmm. matches in addition to the $19,500. And I don't know if you have any listeners over 50, but if you are, if you do, you may, who knows?
Maybe my parents.
60. There you go. Yes. Well, tell your parents and hi, Lily's parents, if you're listening, 60, they can put an extra $6,500 in. In yeah. addition to the $19,500. Okay, so there's a little catch up. Real quick, the difference between a Roth and a regular IRA, and you can also have a Roth or a traditional 401k.
Yep.
Remember I said you save the taxes when you invest money in the 401k, you don't pay taxes up front, mm-hmm. but that you pay taxes later
right.
when you take it out way down the road? Mm-hmm. Well, in a Roth, you pay taxes up front, so you don't get a tax deduction when you put money in the Roth. But you never, ever pay taxes again on that money. It's tax-free forever. Okay. So if you had a choice of, if you were sitting here today and you said, if I had $100,000 and I could have it in a after-tax account, I could have it in a Roth account, or I could have it in a traditional IRA account or 401k account, which one would you rather have?
Well,
and
probably
I won't
the
on
Roth,
the spot,
right?
But of course, yes, because if all things were equal, that Roth will never, you'll never pay tax on it ever again, all the growth. So as a young person, think about, should I do a Roth? Because most 401ks have Roth 401k sleeves. You can either do Roth or traditional. I love it when young people do the Roth, especially before you're up in the super high tax brackets. Like if you're single and you're making 50 or 60 grand, you're up in a decent, you're paying 30% or so with your state tax in there and tax, just your federal and state tax. You get into the higher brackets pretty quick if you're single and making, you know, over 50 or 60,000. But, and then if you're married, the brackets go a little higher before the brackets go up. But if you're in a lower bracket and you're younger and you could just say, let's just do the Roth, you forego a little tax deduction now, but you got money that's seeded And for all those years of that compounding, the magic of compounding we talked about at the outset of the show, that money will never be taxed again. And that's very powerful.
Right.
Okay. So I know I'm throwing a lot at you. You could also do a 401k and to some extent, and you could have a Roth or an IRA on the outside of your work. So you could put money in a Roth or a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA outside of your work 401k. Mm-hmm. You could have both.
You could have both.
Yep. And those you can put up to $6,000 a year into one of those accounts, seven if you're over 50, but you know, so those are another couple tools over and above that savings account we talked about having your emergency reserve account that are, again, powerful tools to plant the seed.
Right. Should you be kind of like, just kind of knocking yourself if you can't max out that 401k and or Roth IRA? Is that common? I mean, again, a lot of the listeners are probably younger. Should you make it a goal to be maxing those out?
Okay. So like a goal is okay. A goal is great. And I would say a shoot for it at some point that's realistic in your, in your personal situation, because everybody's situation is going to be different. But just understanding that any seed that gets planted is going to serve you. Your money will serve you. We have to serve others to make money at first. And then later down the road, your money serves you. And so anything you could do to get started, first of all, because a lot of people never get started ever. They never get started. I see a lot of people that come in here with millions of dollars, and it's not even that hard to have millions anymore. I'm telling you, I already did an exercise that showed you if you saved some money starting at 25 and stopped at 35, you'd have almost $1.5 million. I mean, it's not that hard if you start early, especially to be a multi-millionaire and independently wealthy in your lifetime. It's just not. But I see people that made the same amount of money in their life, like they had the same job and they made the same amount of money. Like one person saved 10 or 15%, the other one saved 2%, and one person has $2 million and the other one has 200,000. Wow. And they're sitting here in my office at age 55 or 60, and they're asking me, what do I do? And frankly, at 55 or 60, you just got to do what you can do at that point. It's the game is over. I mean, the horse is out of the barn. I mean, you can modify things to some extent, but if you're 60 years old, one person has 2 million and one person has 200,000. It's just going to be two very different lifestyles going forward for those two people. Mm-hmm. That's why it's important for me to come on a show like this, Lily. And most, you know, my show, people their 50s and 60s listen, but I do have some younger people listen. We can plug my show here too. I'd love for your listeners to listen in, because they're going to hear things. I'm all about education and inspiring people to say, wait a second. I don't have to be a movie star. I don't have to be a rock star. I don't have to be a freaking professional athlete and make that kind of money to be set in my life someday. And to be able to do things like give back to the community or help family members or just live an inspiring life myself. If we understand this stuff and start early enough.
Yeah, that would be really wild to be living a very lavish lifestyle, but you haven't saved anything, and then hitting that 55 to 60 and realizing, well, I guess I can keep working, or I have to really cut down.
Yeah, I mean, it's a reality, or you just can't stop working. Some people just can't stop working. I mean, there's this thing called Social Security that your listeners probably are thinking, that won't be there, because you hear stories about Social Security being bankrupt and all that. But I mean, people that have paid into the system, you know, they're getting checks for $1,200 or maybe $1,500 or a couple thousand. It just depends on how much you made and how much you paid in. But a good portion of America, like half of America, has no money saved at all for retirement. And the social, they'll be living on Social Security, and that's it. $1,000 a month, $1,200 a month, $800 a month, $1,800, just depends. But it's not what you would look at as an ideal retirement, is my point.
Yeah, definitely. And this, I'm so glad that you're on the show as well, because again, like, I think it's so important to save young. We definitely have, you know, covered that, but, how you were saying too, of like, that's great that you guys advise everyone, because I've definitely heard like you have to have X amount in your retirement savings to be able to even meet with a financial professional, like a certified financial planner. And so then I feel like a lot of people are just kind of turning to Google and crossing their fingers that it's going to tell them something. So, you know, you kind of debunked that. But if, you know, what are really good resources to help people for next steps?
Yeah, it's a great question. Their thinking is right. On a lot of the firms won't talk to somebody if they don't have $500,000, $1 million, $5 million, something like that. I can tell you that at my firm, it's called Keen Wealth Advisors. We will talk to anyone that is serious about wealth building. So, and we can figure that out really quickly. Like, we can tell if someone is really serious about it because, okay, the first exercise we ask somebody to do, track how much money you're spending in 30 days and send us that spreadsheet. Well, we'd lose a lot of people right there. They're like, heck with that. That's too much work. Well, do you follow what I'm saying? That's part of that rules of engagement stuff I was talking about earlier. So I will, because I believe we can change, you know, this might sound big picture, like touchy feely stuff, but I think we can change the world or at least change our country. If we can get these younger generations really thinking about providing for themselves, saving for themselves, saving for the future, not being reliant on the system or so forth. So it's worth it to me to have financial planners in place here that will have introductory calls with anybody to help them think through their situation. And you might think, well, how difficult is that? It could be pretty simple. But to us, it's simple. To them, it's not simple. Mm-hmm. But we can help make that simple to them and say, here's the plan. Here's what we recommend you do. There's not too many moving parts at this point, but you do this. You do A, B, C, and D, and commit to it. And we'll have another call again in a year or so. And we don't even charge for that with folks at this point at all, because I know that a small amount of time for me and helping somebody or one of my planners could be life-changing to somebody else on the other end of it. There are also other things out there that, although they don't do the planning advice, in my experience, if you were to Google robo-advisors, all right, so have you heard of that term, Lily, robo-advisor?
Yeah, I have.
Have you heard of that? Maybe not. So if you Google robo-advisors, you'll see there's some out there that are zero entry points. Like you can $1 get you in or $5 or something. There's no minimum to them. And it's a decent way to start, but they don't really have the handholding and the planning. A lot of financial planning is what we call behavioral advice, helping people not panic when the markets are going down, and helping people not get too euphoric when things are going perfectly, or you're watching something like GameStop go from wherever it was 20 to 400 and thinking that it's going to go to 800. Like, it's a total emotional play. It's a knee-jerk emotional thing that's going to backfire. I mean, it's backfired on a lot of people already. A few people got lucky, but it's so tempting, and folks that don't get it, like, they think that's investing, and next thing you know, or Dogecoin, they think that it's just going to keep going, and they start investing in what they think is investing in one of those things, and they end up losing half their money or three quarters of their money. And you know what they say? They do the same thing I said earlier. When we try to oversave, they say, screw this. This sucks. I tried it. I lost my butt. I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah,
I'm just going to live for the moment. And so having your assets, understanding that behavioral stuff that might not come with one of those robo-advisors, where it does come when you talked with a professional advisor that can relate to emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I also think it's important to talk about, you might just have a 401k. So the way a good portion of your listeners are going to be investing might be in the 401k. So it might be custodied at your company by, you know, a Charles Schwab or a Fidelity, one of those types of companies. And those companies, now listen, if you're in a 401k, it is highly likely that the custodian of that 401k, meaning the company that's housing the 401k, not your HR department at your work, because they're not going to give you advice because they have lit risk and liability, mm-hmm. but the company that's custodying your 401k, you will have a contact there. And in almost all cases, there is free advice from a planner of some kind at those custodians if you have a 401k set up. Okay, that's a really powerful free tool that most of these plans offer. And I would say 100% take advantage of that. They'll run you through a quick retirement plan. They'll put some numbers together. They'll put your age in there. They'll have a targeted retirement date and your income and your savings. And they'll walk you through you know, what the power of what you're doing is. And that's a great place to start.
Yeah, okay? So you were saying the custodian is that Charles Schwab, Fidelity, American, whoever that representative is. Would be a great person.
Yeah, American Funds or whoever says call you on your statement to call for help, ask if there's a plan, if they have any planning or guidance and counsel. And a lot of times they will. Okay. Remember, we will do it here too. There's a few other firms. Also, if you Google, what do we call that? It's escaping my mind. robo-advisors.
Robo-advisors, yeah.
The robo-advisor, yes, the robo-advisor is something that takes your money and it puts it into a diversified portfolio of investments, and it keeps it balanced for you without you really having to do anything. You just have to pick what portfolio that you want, and it'll be pretty much autopilot. It's not a bad way to do it, and it keeps you out of doing things like Bitcoin. I'm sorry to keep picking on that stuff. I'm not saying I'm against it. I'm just saying people that are trying to put like real long-term savings in it, thinking it's an investment and it's really, they're really speculating, it can be damaging. That's all I'm trying to say with that stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
These other methods keep you in things that are long-term, good long-term investments. And finally, before we go, I wanted to tell you, for young people, if you can own and understand and live this piece of information, it's going to behoove you for the rest of your lives. When the stock markets are going down, when things are horrific, like a year ago or so, back in March, April of 2020, during the COVID outbreak, the initial lockdowns, the markets were down massively. Like if you had 100,000 in your account in the stock market, the broad base of stocks, you looked up and you had close to 60,000 in 30 days later. Like it was really got hammered. It was down close to 40% in 30 days. And if you can understand that those short-term corrections or those declines in the market have always been temporary to date, and they've always come back and gone higher. So those are opportunities. They are not things to run from and be fearful of. Mm-hmm. The only time you lose money in an environment like that is if you own a good broad base of stocks. Like I would just recommend using the S&P 500 index fund as a broad-based proxy for the market, is if you sell it, if you panic and sell it at the wrong time, thinking, oh my gosh, I have to sell before this goes to zero, you have to educate yourself and understand that volatility is your friend. Volatility gives you opportunity to buy more shares cheaper and add to your positions, not to be afraid and fearful. When you get out toward retirement and you need this money back, that's when we start making the accounts more conservative. But mm-hmm. when you're saving for the long term, I recommend most folks go into basically 100% stock portfolio. It's going to be volatile. There'll be times it goes down, but those are times that you can add more, or just know that it's opportunistic. It's not something that's going to go clear to zero. It never has in the several hundred years the market's been around. So please just own that and experience it that way, and it will behoove you for the rest of your life. Our wealthiest clients are people who understand market cycles and don't get panicked at all when we go through corrections and declines temporarily. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think something that helped me last in 2020, March, April, was whenever the market was terrible. And I saw that graph where it kind of shows you with the Great Depression and, you know, the 2009, the dip, and just showing on where those went down, how they came back up, and that it's always going down, but it's always going to come back up. I feel like that helped me stay sane.
We were talking offline, Lily, about an issue that kind of related to something around an experience that you learned from where money went into a 401k, but you didn't invest it in anything. And mm-hmm. I believe, now tell me, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you looked up a number of months or years later and realized it had done squat because it wasn't actually invested in anything. It was just sitting in the money market account. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was actually that internship that I was talking about to you when I said I didn't care. I truly didn't. I just left it there. And this past year actually is whenever I looked into it, because I remembered I even had it. Again, really didn't care I had it. And it just kind of sat there with the couple hundred dollars that was put into it by my intern employer. And yeah, I think that was a big realization, is with your IRA, at least if you don't touch the money that you put in there, it's just going to sit there.
Yeah. So some 401ks today are they're looking at making them automatically go into what's called an age-based portfolio based on your age and what potential retirement date could be, so that it gets invested. Because a lot of people just, man, when it comes to making a decision or taking an action, a lot of humans just defer to no action. We just do nothing. Right. Yeah. So one of the things the government's talking about now is setting it up so if you, it's actually a smart thing. If somebody starts work, they automatically get signed up in the 401k, and they have to de-enroll or unenroll. Mm-hmm. And most people just do nothing in any scenario. So if they're signed up, they leave it signed up. If they're not signed up, they leave it not signed up. Okay. So, cause we default as humans to be distracted by all the busy stuff around us, and we just do nothing as a default. So I would love it if the government did that, automatically sign people up and automatically invested their money. But what Lily's talking about now is you have money that you think's invested in a 401k, but it's just sitting there in the money market account, money market's just basically a demand deposit, like a savings account, making virtually zero. And it should have been in, and you can change it, hopefully you have, into something that's pretty much all stocks. Like, and when you're looking at your paperwork, it'll say risky. It might say the highest risk and the lowest risk. Well, here, think about it this way. Let me turn it on its head. If you're 23 and you've got money sitting in an account that you're saving for 30 years and you have it in what they're calling the lowest risk and it's making zero, but it's not going down at all ever. Okay, that sounds great. But you look out 30 years from now and it's still the same as it was 30 years prior because it didn't do anything. I would call that risky.
Yeah.
Okay. The one that they're calling highest risk is one that goes, it goes up. I mean, the market's made 10% a year on average for the last 100 plus years or so. It's not a straight line. Some years it makes 20, some years it makes negative. Mm-hmm. You have to just understand that. But what I would call what they're calling the highest risk, I would call the safest for somebody who's saving for 30 years. As long as you understand that and know that it's going to be there. You're not going to panic and sell out and freak out and all that stuff, right? We just talked about that. So it's the safest when it comes to growing the most over time, giving you the opportunity to grow the most. And once you get out to where you know you're going to need it within 5 years, that's when you start making it more conservative.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm giving you a little more than we agreed to talk about earlier, but I'm hoping that it's impactful for your listeners, Lily.
No, definitely. And again, like this was such a good episode and I, of course, always wish we had more time, but that's what's so great about you is you have all these resources that people can look towards if they, you know, need some more advice or they, you know, need just want more information about how to save for the future. So where are some places that people can find you and keep up with you?
Yep. Perfect. So I do the podcast and the podcast is out on iTunes, Spotify. It's out on all the major channels. It's been out for a long time. I think 140 episodes or so. And I look it up every so often on Google Podcasts and I use the word retirement and it's typically up there in the top 10 or so on the Google Podcast for retirement, but it's called Keen on Retirement. It's kind of a play on words there. My last name, mm-hmm. keenonretirement.com. You can go there. There's a blog and podcast, both a blog. You can sign up for that blog and podcast. So you'll get an email from me every week or two. That'll show you when a new episode drops. And you can go to also keenwealthadvisors.com under retirement resources, blog and podcast. Okay. So there's two ways. And when you sign up, okay, so you can sign up through Spotify or, you know, iTunes, whatever, all those channels, we're on all of them. And you just kind of see it pop through on your phone. You get notified on your phone, there's an episode. But if you sign up on my webpage, and in your email in there, you'll actually get the show notes. So we do a really good job on show notes where you can like click on links and things like that and see the episode summarized. It's a pretty good thing to get if it's interesting to you.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it's good. And then I also have a book out. It hit bestseller on Amazon, number one bestseller on Amazon.
There you go.
It came out in September of 2019. And it's also called Keen on Retirement, Engineering the Second Half of Life. Now, a lot of these you listeners are still in the first half of life, which is totally cool. That doesn't mean you still can't engineer the first half either. We're just talking about engineering the whole thing, okay? So that book's out on Amazon, and it comes in. There's one in Kindle, and then there's also one in what's the audio thing called?
Why can't I think of it? Now?
Whatever
audio,
that's called.
Audible.
Audible, yes. So there's a paperback, there's an Audible version, and there's a Kindle version. So. If you want to read more about, if you want to read that book, check that out. It'd be awesome. So I'm always good for reviews too. You know how that goes.
Yeah.
Amazon reviews. So.
Yes.
And podcast reviews. But
5 stars.
But the podcast and the blog, it's a free resource. And man, if you have an interest and you want to try to better yourself on this stuff and learn, plug into that. You can look back at all the episodes, check it out. And if anybody has any questions for me, to me, it's like a life mission now. It's not just about, it stopped being about, you know, making money for my firm. And I mean, that's all good. We have a business and all that, but it's more about touching people's lives. And I'm impacted and inspired when people reach out that are trying to better themselves. So if somebody wants to reach out to me and has a question, it's BKEEN at keenwealthadvisors.com. Okay.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, and I'll include that too in the description so people can find you. But I really, really appreciate you coming on. This was so helpful. I know I feel like I feel like I have been doing this, but there's still things I don't know. And this, I feel like, really helped me understand it too. And it's always good to be able to catch up on these things. So I really appreciate it.
Awesome, Lily. I'm glad to be one of your guests. You've had some great guests on your program, so it's cool to be added to that list now.
Yes, I feel honored to be able to have talked to you. So,
all right,
awesome. Well, sounds good. We'll talk to everybody next week. Bye. Hey guys, it's Lily. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for supporting. If you ever want to find a way to help support me even more, you can rate this 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or subscribe on Spotify. Again, thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.